From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie, and welcome to the world's most listened to late night talk show, Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, none other than Whitley Strieber joins us. 2012, The War for Souls. Get ready for this one. It'll be a classic. You know, this started off as a joke, sort of, when I kept talking about the Chinese recall of the week. It's not a joke anymore. It's real. More than 500,000 toys now, including keychains, Winnie the Pooh bookmarks, baby Einstein color blocks, are being recalled because of excessive lead levels, according to the Consumer Product Safety Commission. And among the recalled toys, where were they made? All made in China. Even keychains with words like truth or believe engraved on them that have high levels of lead. Lead is toxic in large amounts. A 4-year-old Minneapolis boy died of lead poisoning in 2006 when he swallowed a small charm in smaller amounts. Lead can cause developmental delays and behavioral problems in children. And on top of all this, the Boy Scouts of America said that a painted plastic badge commonly worn by some of its youngest scouts is being voluntarily recalled after a test revealed high levels of lead in the paint. As many as 1.6 million of the badges, which are made in China, may be affected by the recall. I think it's time for our government to crack down on this disaster. The Soviets beat the United States at getting a satellite and a man into space. We beat them at the moon, though, didn't we? But now the Chinese may get to the moon before we can make a return visit. And 50 years after Sputnik became the world's first artificial satellite, a new race is underway with the finish line on the moon, according to NASA. And NASA's chief, Michael Griffin, says that he believes China will get back to the moon before we do. I find that statement to be unbelievable. On the line with us now, head of the EnterpriseMission.com, Richard C. Hoagland. Richard, what a statement to make.
Well, it almost confirms what I've said on this show in the last several months, that we're not really racing like we want to win. And the prize, as this audience well knows, is not gold, it's not helium-3, it's not platinum. It's the extraordinary ancestry of an ancient extraterrestrial civilization that left ruins all over the moon that NASA has been hiding and covering up for over 30 years, which we have just laid out in great detail in our new book, Dark Mission. And next week, you and I and Mike Barra are going to have 3 hours with this audience, the most extraordinary, important audience in media, to lay out the case for why Mike Griffin and this government doesn't seem this time to be racing to the ultimate prize for all of humanity.
Wasn't it Jim Webb who was the NASA administrator during the moon landing period?
That's right.
He never, Richard, he never would have conceded going to the moon, giving it to the Soviets at the time.
Not without a major explanation, and we have some backstory on that too, which we'll talk about next week. I mean, this really, tonight, is an extraordinary anniversary, because it's supposed to be the anniversary of the beginning of the space race. Well, next week, you and I and Mike are going to talk about how that's not exactly the history the way it really happened.
That'll be Tuesday night. Richard C. Hoagland and Mike Barra will be on Coast to Coast, a complete program with Richard C. and Mike Barra. DarkMission.net is his new website, in addition to EnterpriseMission.com, and we're going to talk about all these things that have been going on in space. We'll even squeeze in a few questions about the face on Mars. Thanks, Richard.
Thanks, George.
Japan has placed a satellite in orbit around the moon for the very first time in a major space breakthrough for the Asian nation. The $279 million craft is the largest lunar mission since the Apollo program in terms of overall scope and ambition. The mission involves placing the main satellite in orbit at an altitude of about 60 miles and deploying two smaller satellites in polar orbits. Researchers will use data gathered by the probes to study the moon's origin and evolution. A father tied his 10-year-old daughter's hands and feet, watched her swim in a chilly southern China river for more than 3 hours in a task that he said would help the girl achieve her dream of swimming across the English Channel. And she did it. She swam more than a mile, traveling with the current. The girl swam by moving like a dolphin and would sometimes paddle with her bound hands. A miraculous recovery, the last of 3,200 miners, not 320, 3,200 miners trapped for more than 24 hours in a deep mine shaft, brought to safety, ending one of South Africa's biggest ever rescue operations. The rescue workers had worked during the day to bring up the remaining 500 South African gold miners trapped for more than a day deep in a shaft after an accident damaged an elevator. It's called Vision Quest, and it includes talking about global collective consciousness. In a moment, Deborah Pratt, our guest on Coast to Coast AM. Well, Deborah Pratt is an author, actress, director, producer, visionary. She made her very first mark in Hollywood on the television series such as Magnum P.I., Earwolf, as well as head writer and co-executive producer also of the internationally acclaimed television series Quantum Leap. She provided audiences provocative trips to the future and the past. Her latest work, The Vision Quest, revolves around Earth and the fascinating state of humanity in the year 2165. I wonder how old I'll be then, Deborah. I've got to add that up. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. How are you tonight?
Great, great. How did you get involved in the visionary look of the future with programs like Quantum Leap, and we'll talk about Vision Quest in just a moment? How did this all happen for you?
I think I've always been fascinated by the ability to look into the future, precognitive thought, and the idea of time travel, which I think we do on a constant basis but just aren't aware that we do it, is something that's just kind of ingrained in my psyche. So the idea of having someone actually travel through time and help people was inspiring to me.
Well, let me tell you, Deborah, living in Los Angeles, I know you've got a great reputation out that way as a visionary yourself for some of the things that you've done. And it's kind of neat because this program, of course, devoted to a lot of things you've done in your career as well as we look toward the future, 2012 and beyond. Tell me about Vision Quest and why you wrote it.
Well, you want to know the philosophy or the book itself?
Well, we'll talk about the philosophy and the book.
All right, well, the book itself.
I'm going to probably keep you for the hour, so just have some fun here.
All right, you got it. The book itself is a classic Joseph Campbell call to adventure, and it really deals with the fact that the science and technology that we're setting up today, and you were talking earlier in the program of what is the world that we're leaving for our children, what's the legacy that we're leaving for them, and that was pretty much the question that I asked myself, the what if question. And the idea that we are genetically splicing human genetics into animals and vegetables and plants. You can't get a strawberry that doesn't have salmon genetics in it to protect them from the cold so they can grow year-round. The reality of human genetics into animals and creating alternate species, the story that I wanted to tell was their humanity was so new to them, they remember the powers that we forgot. So that we as these incredible beings had these great teachers like Edgar Cayce and Jesus Christ. And Jesus Christ said, do as I say. And he really meant that with all these powers that we have. And we use them on a daily basis in little ways, like the ability to, you know, think of a loved one and have them call. So or you walk into a room in a meeting and you can pick up someone's aura. You may not see it as a color, but you certainly feel it as an energy field. And so I wanted to take the book and through storytelling, really kind of explore in another time, because that's kind of safe for people to imagine.
Sure.
What it would be like to have those powers. And it starts at 2012 when in the story, even though you find out where you are in the world, in 2012, the Earth shifts off its axis in a grand galactic alignment and starts to recreate itself. So parts of South America sink and continents raise, and on these continents, we find what are called Norbs that have been left by the first inhabitants of Earth.
And Norbs?
G-N-O-R-B-S, knowledge orbs.
Okay.
And so our hero, who's a 17-year-old boy coming of age,
has to live in this world that we're creating for him right now. And what's that like? And what's the technology? I wanted to, you know, explore what Jules Verne had done by challenging technology to say, well, you know, we couldn't create holographic responders for communication. We now communicate through the VibraNet. There's just a whole level of things I wanted to explore. And so it took me 7 years to write this trilogy.
How did you hone in on the year 2165? How'd you come up with that one?
Well, in truth, I started time over. 2165 was something that was more relative to something that we could project. But time starts over. So in the book, I talk about after Quake. So it's about 118 AQ. And what I did was I took the Mayan calendar and the 13-moon cycle and reformulated time to put us back in sync with nature, which is one of the things that I really feel will bring us back to our powers.
Well, I'll be 215 then, Deborah. I don't think in this life I'll be around, but you never know.
Well,
on
in the
some
book,
other
you
life.
Can have the option of cloning yourself and then transplanting your brain.
Ah, you know, and I think one day we may very well get to that.
As
a matter of fact, did you know, I don't know if you followed baseball, but have you ever heard of the legendary Ted Williams? He played for the Boston Red Sox.
I have heard the name, yes.
Okay, he has passed away, and he has been cryogenically captured, basically. What they did is they severed his head from the body. They've discarded the body. They've kept the head in a cryogenic chamber with the hopes of one day cloning him. And then they're going to hopefully, just like you say, download the information, his memory from his brain, and we'll have a brand new Ted Williams all over again. It's amazing. But this is real.
Well, you know, we have the ability. We have the ability to do a lot of these things. We don't have all the answers, but who's to say that in 20 years or 50 years or 100 years, we won't figure it out. We're pretty smart. And
Vision,
we're only using 5% of our brain capacity. So,
Vision Quest, you look at a lot of things that we've looked at as well, mass consciousness, cryptozoology, and so many other facets. The mass consciousness, I truly believe, is going to get perfected eventually. We've experimented with it. We've done some remarkable things collectively with millions of people thinking about something together. Some of it may be out of control because it is infant for us. But you took this as a topic as well. Tell me about that.
I believe that we live in a limited set of dimensions, these three dimensions, time, if you consider time as a fourth dimension. And what we need to start to look at is how to expand our thoughts outside of those three dimensions. And the way to do that is to accept it on a collective consciousness level so that we can begin to communicate telepathically, clairvoyantly. I mean, I think that, again, all these powers exist. The ability to find your keys where they weren't and suddenly they are is something that you do as an individual. But if you're in a group of people, I think that we can protect the planet. I think we can heal the planet. I think that we can communicate with alien races. I think they're waiting for us to get together, to unify. And through the power of thought, through shows like yours, where so many people are focused on you, on what you're doing, on what you're talking about, there's an energy that flows from it. You hear stories of the tsunami where, of course, all the animals ran to higher ground. They have a collective consciousness where they know in tune with the earth that things are going to happen. We as humans have been so wrought with fear by religions and governments who have told us we can't do that, we can't do that. If we get back to that, who's to say that in a situation like that, we can't stop that tsunami because we collectively put our energy towards stopping it? And if we can stop, you know, Mother Nature, who's to say that we can't stop some of the negativity that we're putting out in wars and hunger and some of the horrible things that we have to deal with in this paradise that we live in?
Well, you know, when we heard stories, biblical accounts of Moses parting the Red Sea.
Exactly.
And Jesus walking across water, you know, making gallons and gallons of wine from just a little bit. I mean, I think these individuals, with gifts from above, of course, they were able to tap into something and do these remarkable things. And for some reason, we lost that, Deborah, over the years, and I don't know why.
I think because we went against nature. I think we went against nature in the sense that we created the Gregorian calendar, which is out of sync with this planet. I think that we went against nature and that people wanted to control our thoughts, and we lost direct connection to the spirit of the universe. And one of our goals in this time of enlightenment, that, you know, the book is called The Age of Light, is to get back to that one-on-one connection. We have all the power of the universe to draw from, but we've got to remember how to get there.
We're talking with Deborah Pratt. Of course, she's an actress, director, author now. We're talking about her book, The Vision Quest, her website, thevisionquest.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. You kind of touch a little bit on a subject also that's dear to our hearts, and that's the possibility of these secret societies that are out there. You, I guess, believe that a very important ingredient in all of this.
Well, I think that there are groups of people, and I don't want to call them cults of people, who are finding like kind, you know, and you attract them hugely in the sense that they have a consciousness as to what's happening. They have an understanding as to what's coming. So they're finding each other. Now, you can term them as secret societies. I think there are negative, and I think that there are positive. I think that the negative ones have managed to manipulate, our governments. They've managed to manipulate our religions. And in the book, one of the things that I did was I took all religions and put them into a computer and said to the computer, find what we have in common, and created a universal God and a universal religion, so that we could still honor God and the universe, but there were no differences.
I was going to say, Deborah, I bet there were a lot of things in common with all these different religions.
Yes, because most of them stem from the same core religious, the
yes.
religion. If you look back through history, Christianity, Judaism, Mohammedism, all come from the same core religion, which is very fascinating, and where they bend off, but at the same time, the Hindu and the older religions that are out there, they all follow the same path, and I think Joseph Campbell really expressed that in how storytelling evolved into religion.
Now, I understand you're offering, by the way, a novel for free for all my listeners. This is kind of unheard of. What are you doing?
Well, actually, that was set up for until the book came out August 1st. Now, you can download a chapter, but I don't know that we still have the entire book up, and I should have checked now that I said that.
Well, you may have. I think your publicist says we're offering it to us. You can download it
All
if
right,
you go to the website.
All right, it's still there. Because I think what's important about the message in the book, this goes into the philosophy of it, that if we can start through entertainment, playing around with the idea that we have these powers, and we start believing it, and we start teaching our children that if you think about me, I'm going to know you're thinking about me. And if you need me to be there, I will astral project myself, and I will be with you. We have these abilities. I know myself. I know you've had experiences like this.
All the time, Deb. Yeah. I can't get away from it.
You can't. I got carjacked in 91. And the series of events that happened before it and during it were amazing to me. And they're part of you know, the story in the book, in the sense that I had a feeling that someone was following me. I remember stopping in the middle of the street, and they were next to me, and they stopped too because they were looking in the window, and I was by myself, and they realized that I just stopped in the middle of the street, and they drove on. And then I kind of went to the place that I was going to go, and I remember seeing a homeless person saying, you know, I'm so blessed there, but for the grace of God go I. And, you know, I felt safe and good within myself, and I got up, and I parked, and I was right under a light and across the street from where I was going. And as soon as I popped the door handle, the door ripped open, and a guy's there with a gun in my face.
Ugh.
And from that moment on, I watched from above the events that took place.
All right, Deborah, stay with us. We're going to open up the phone lines to give you an opportunity to talk with Deborah Pratt. You know, she was a co-executive producer of Quantum Leap, so if you want to ask her questions about that, as well as the future of 2165, do so. By the way, the Browns, Ed and Elaine Browns, those two convicted of tax evasion, have been arrested. We're going to get an update from Dave Von Kleist in just a moment. We're going to take phone calls in just a moment with Deborah Pratt. But first, you know, the story that we have been following for many, many months now, that of the plight of Ed and Elaine Brown in New Hampshire. They were convicted on what the government says, tax evasion. The Browns claim that they don't owe the tax, that there's no law that forces them to pay it. And they have been in their compound for some time now. And I shouldn't say compound, it's their house, actually. They just have a lot of acreage. And on the line with us now, Dave Von Kleist. He is part of the radio program The Power Hour, and is also the husband of Nurse Joyce Riley, who's a regular guest here on Coast to Coast AM. David, give us an update, if you would, David, because I know you were dear friends of the Browns. What is going on tonight?
Well, right now the details are very sketchy. I just was called by a fellow broadcaster. It's networking around right now. But as far as we know, at approximately 7 o'clock Eastern time, authorities came in and arrested Elaine and Ed Brown without incident. So we're glad to hear that there wasn't any violence or anything like that. There's supposed to be a news conference tomorrow at around 10 o'clock up in New Hampshire. So the details right now are very sketchy, but if, as you mentioned, that we've been following this issue since it began. We've known the Browns. Joyce and I have known the Browns, for over 10 years. I guess it was 96 that we met them when Joyce and I were traveling around the country doing programs for veterans, and he and Elaine had put a program together at an American Legion up there in that neck of the woods in New Hampshire. And so that's when we first got to meet them. So we've been in touch with them off and on, not steadily, but over the years. And this is why, you know, when we heard about this, we sort of had an idea of their background. And knowing Ed, he is not one for backing down. When he knows what he's standing mm-hmm. for is right, then he'll stand to the death. And that's exactly what his stand was going to be on this issue. And I'm very glad that he's taken the time to do this, because of the fact that he's raised awareness nationally about this issue with the income tax, just like the late Aaron Russo's film Freedom to Fascism spells this whole thing out. And indeed, researchers have gone in for many years trying to find any law that requires anyone to file an income tax return or pay an income tax. He's right. The law simply does not exist. And they convicted him of breaking a law that doesn't exist. And that's why he took the stand that he did.
Louisiana attorney Tom Crier was acquitted on similar type charges. Who knows? Maybe, as you say, David, this entire case with all its publicity just might make everyone look at this a little closer and say, you know what, there could be a problem with this entire tax code.
Oh, absolutely. And I spoke with Ed. As a matter of fact, he was on our program this morning. I was talking with him about hooking him up with you. So I'm sad that he wasn't able to make it on your program. He agreed to come on your program tonight. So I'd contacted Tom, and after I was networking back and forth, and I didn't hear back from Ed. So then my phone rang a couple hours later, and I found out why I didn't hear back from Ed.
Yeah. We got the inkling, Dave, as you know, that something was amiss here. And I am glad, like you, because they both said on our program that they would not be taken alive. And I guess somehow the law enforcement officials were able to convince them or otherwise to come in and come in peacefully.
Yeah, well, like I said, we'll probably get some more details from the news conference tomorrow. And there are swarms of people that are supporters of the Browns, not just in New Hampshire, but all around the country that will, you know, obviously network this information and get it out there, because we just can't rely on the mainstream networks to tell the truth. They distorted the story right from the get-go. And made the Browns out to be some evil, you know, wacky anti-government people, which they are absolutely not. They just happen to read, and they studied the law, and they, like I said, they're standing for what they found. And many other people are ready, willing, and able to make the stand with them.
How long were they in their home there?
I believe that it was in mid-January that the original conviction was handed down. And the sentencing, I believe, was right around April 16th. So they've been on their property since January. I'd gone up there right after this had first occurred. I guess it was right around January 24th or something like that. And then we wanted to help to focus attention on this particular issue. So after Elaine Brown was a guest on our program, Joyce and I were talking about it. She says, Dave, why don't you go up there and do some of your music? You know, because these days I do politically incorrect, in-your-face, you lying son of a gun, government music after doing regular stuff for 30 years. So
right. We
decided in June to go up there and do a Show Me the Law concert. And so I wrote a song for the occasion and went up there, and we had a big old picnic. We had about 60 or 70 people on 2 or 3 days' notice. I mean, this really was a slap-together thing, and we drove 24 hours straight from Missouri to get up there to New Hampshire and put this little concert on. And the idea stuck, so 3 weeks later they put up a second concert, and they were planning to do a third one about 3 weeks ago, and we drove up there, and federal authorities had put up blockades to prevent people from going up there, claiming that the noise from the previous concert had upset the local neighbors. Well, the only noise from the previous concert was created from the Homeland Security helicopter that buzzed us for about 6.5 hours, and we've got videos of that all over the YouTube. And that was quite an amazing experience to be out there playing guitar and singing and have a helicopter about 75 feet just sitting there hovering over you for, like I said, for 6.5 hours.
David, some people will say, now, come on now, the Browns have broken the law. They've been convicted in a court. They should pay for their crime. What do you tell people like that?
Well, people say that, you know, they've been convicted of breaking a law. I would ask, what law? And again, what is it? There's a saying that says the concurrence of 1,000 judges does not change the truth. We are either a country of opinions or a country of laws. We have to make that choice. I mean, if a judge decides that they're guilty of something and convicts them, that doesn't make it right. The bottom line here is that if there is a law that requires us to do something, well, then we have to do that. The argument being made that they broke a law because they didn't pay an income tax is ridiculous, because there's no law that says they have to do it. That's why the IRS tax code, it says it's based upon voluntary compliance. Now, one of the former IRS commissioners made the argument saying that, well, you know, it's sort of like stopping at a red light, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning and there's nobody there. I mean, come on. So everybody has the opportunity to roll through a red light. We ask that you comply and stop at a red light. Well, that's all well and good, but you see, the difference is that there is a written law that requires you to stop at a red light. So if there is a law that says we have to file an income tax, where is the law? And also, if we do file an income tax return and sign it, is that not giving up your Fifth Amendment right? That's another question.
It's a good question.
California has offered three $100,000 rewards for 8 years, and to this day, all three rewards have gone uncollected. The first reward is for anyone who can produce the law that requires someone to file an income tax return and pay an income tax. The second $100,000 would go to anybody who can show that by filing an income tax return, how are you not giving up your Fifth Amendment right? And the third $100,000 is for anyone who can show how the 16th Amendment was properly and lawfully ratified.
And they can't prove that. Hey, David, where do people hear you and Joyce Riley on the Power Hour?
That's right. www.thepowerhour.com will give you listening information. We're on AM, FM stations, international shortwave, and, of course, on the Internet.
All right, David. We're going to continue to follow up on the story of the Browns. Breaking story. Apparently, they have finally been arrested after being holed up in their home in New Hampshire for many, many months. And we'll just do updates in the days ahead, and we'll give you the full scoop on this story. When we come back, we'll take your calls now with Deborah Pratt on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, we're with Deborah Pratt. She's, of course, author, actress, director, producer, and visionary. She's just put together the package called The Vision Quest, which kind of revolves around the Earth and the fascinating state of humanity in the year 2165. Deborah, is it a good year, 2165, during that period?
Well, like I said, I restarted time, and it's 118 AQ after the quakes that changed us. But I think it's a wonderful period because we've opened our minds. We've found a connection to unify ourselves as a planet. We don't have governments as we know them today. And basically, corporations helped us through some really hard times. So I think it's a better time in the sense that we've leveled the playing field and we've re-empowered ourselves. I want to say that on the site, on the visionquest.com site, there's a section where I've asked people who have read the book to create themselves into the future. So you get to do a little time traveling with me. And they're creating characters that imagine what their life will be like in 118 AQ. And then the challenge is that the readers and the questers, as I call them, I will actually select one of those characters and build them into the book, the films, the games, all the various things that I really hope to grow this world into, and then also create a virtual world. So if we can create it virtually by bringing in the greatest minds on this planet, what are the alternative fuels and what are the alternative energies and what are the alternative opportunities that we have that exist now? If we can build them into a virtual environment and then through collective consciousness, why can't we build them into reality?
Great idea. To the phones we go. East of the Rockies, you're on with Deborah Pratt on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, my name's Jay. I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Hi, Jay.
Hi, Jay.
I had a question for Ms. Pratt. Earlier when you guys were talking, you made the mention of why, you know, there was people that did performed a lot of miracles, you know, a long, long time ago, and you don't see that today, and we've lost it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things you said is because, you know, the calendar that we use now, as opposed to the natural cycle of the Earth. And my question is that, you know, do you really think it matters in, like, the spiritual or the metaphysical world, you know, what I think the date is?
It doesn't have that much to do with the date. It's the cycle of the Earth, the fact that every 28 days there's a moon and the tides flow the way they flow. And then we put a calendar on it that's an unnatural calendar. That's why we have leap years. That's why there's 31 days one month and 28 days another month. We're off of our cycle, and I think that part of being off that cycle has affected how we think, how we communicate, how we get back in touch with the universe.
There you go. Okay, thanks, Jay. West of the Rockies, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Chris in Los Angeles.
Hi, Chris. Not too far. Go ahead.
My question for Deborah is, we all know Quantum Leap was a hit show with a huge following.
The Leapers.
But it was suddenly canceled. And I'd like to know the reason it was canceled. Now, I have heard the reason was that the producer, Don Bellisario, and his wife were divorcing, and she got the show as part of the divorce, and that the network didn't have confidence in her to produce the show.
Hmm.
Well, I was the wife, and that was...
You were the wife?
That wasn't the case. I can attest, you know, we created the show together. We loved the show together. We were way ahead of our time. If you notice, there was nothing on like Quantum Leap. Nothing. And they didn't know where to put us. They moved the show 6 times in the 5 years we were on. And they couldn't, and the Leapers followed us wherever we went. By the way, in 2009, there's a Leap Back convention. We're about to start working on a Quantum Leap movie that I've come up with based on one of the characters, Sammy Joe, that I created. So, you know, that's not the reason that it was taken off the air. It was taken off the air because there was nothing like it on at the time. The programming had trouble placing it with the right lead in and the right lead out.
Mm-hmm.
But it had nothing to do with the fact that we separated and divorced. It had to do with just the time of the run of the show, and they didn't know what to do with us. And then if you look after it, a horde of shows came that were similar. And I think we launched a style of entertainment that has not been surpassed.
Well, I think you're right. Scott Bakula, great to work with, huh?
Yeah. Both he and Dean Stockwell are professional, wonderful, humorous, and they made it a pleasure to go to work every day.
Wildcard Line, welcome to the program. Hi there. Go ahead. You with us?
Yes, sir.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes, Georgia. My question for Deborah is what she thinks about deja vu. I've had a few experiences with that and always wondered what the science might be behind it.
Do you ever get into that, Deborah?
In the sense that I believe that we live in parallel universes, that we exist at multiple times. Again, this is the expansion of consciousness that I think we have to grow into. And I think when you live that event and remember it, that's that kind of remembering that you lay into, you actually have lived that event. And you've made a choice for it to go a different way. Go ahead.
You can finish. I had just another question for you. Go ahead.
Just in the sense that I think we make, I think Quantum Leap kind of fell into that reality, that we have the ability to relive and change increments in our life.
And you talk about splicers, Deborah. Those are real. Those are going to happen.
They are happening. We live with them, and we don't know it in the sense that they may not be out in the world with us today, but you have to know that there are labs out there working with genetics. Michael Crichton wrote a book that came out this summer called Next that dealt with the exact same kind of issues where they are taking human genetics and putting them into animals. So it's out there. It's in the ether. We have the technology to do it, and there are no laws that say that we can't, just like our tax laws that don't exist. You know, there's no laws out there, so people are doing it.
Let's go to our final caller, International Line. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
And where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Ontario, Canada.
All right, sir. Go ahead, Gordon.
I just wanted to comment maybe actually get some comments from Deborah on you guys earlier were talking about cults and or perhaps secret societies. I'm actually a Freemason, and a lot of the things that you were talking about actually parallel the types of rites and rituals that we go through.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's no doubt that so many people have talked about Freemasonry and also the fact that they could be part of the Illuminati. I don't think the Freemasons that we know that go out with the Shriners and collect money for kids, that's what we're not talking about. Gordon, do you ever see at a higher up level what's going on there?
Sometimes. It depends on... You know that there's certain things going on in the background that not everybody's privy to. There are certain levels of Freemasonry that you can actually go up to a 33rd level where you become a Knight Templar. And those things take a little while to get to. And I still think that there's other things that are going on in the background. Actually, Gordon isn't my real name. I didn't want to use my real name because I might be recognized. I have a unique name, so...
Okay, we understand. And do I see a television show in the future called Vision Quest, Deborah?
I have actually created the trilogy of films. There are 3 television shows I want to pull out of it and 11 video games plus a massively multi-online role-playing game, which is what we're setting up now on the site. But I had a question. I had heard that every president of the United States has been at least a 41st level Mason.
Now, I got to tell you, Deborah, you are absolutely correct. As a matter of fact, I don't know if it's everyone, but it's a very strong majority of presidents. We're out of time. Deborah Pratt has been our guest. Her website, thevisionquest.com. Deborah, we'll get together when I come back to Los Angeles back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with Whitley Strieber.